G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out.
Whitey, good morning.
Good morning, Daniel. I'm interested to catching up with Jimmy today because we didn't obviously speak to him last week. Just his thoughts on being involved in Trade Week for the first time as a director of the Giants and how he enjoyed it and whether it was different to what he thought it would be. Now, he was kind of involved a little bit with Brisbane as well when he was sort of just tinkering around the edges when he was at the Lions. But he was so front and centre. Well, the Giants were certainly so front and centre, particularly sort of dealing with his old club, just how he thought that all played out and what he thought of it. I'll be interested to talk to Jimmy about that.
Yeah, so Jimmy's got lots to say about the world of sports, so we'll have a chat to him after 7 o'clock, of course. And I'm keen to see he's taken the local legends too, because being a real local cricketing guru himself, Jim, back in the old days, and he probably knows half the people we're speaking to this morning.
Yes, exactly right, exactly right. And the other interesting thing I thought of yesterday was David Noble talking about his style. And we'll talk to him, obviously, later on this morning, but talking about how he wants to kick goals.
I like goals.
And, yeah, so do I. And he sort of said, you know, I want to sort of kick goals and then stop goals. And he had a player, I'm not sure if you remember, or North Melbourne had a player by the name of Ben Brown, who kicked lots of goals.
He used to kick lots of goals for Kangas, yeah.
He's no longer at North Melbourne.
No more goal kicking.
I wonder if he was there a bit earlier, whether Ben Brown would have still been a North Melbourne player.
I wonder if he'd... Yeah, well, I'm keen to get his answer on that. When you pose that question, I'm keen to get his answer.
I know he'll say, well, it doesn't matter because it's irrelevant, he's not there and all this sort of thing. And I'm sure he won't sort of go down that path. But it's such a fascinating thing, that Ben Brown. The more I think about it, just how crazy it is. But anyway, it's done now, isn't it?
Well, no doubt it's done. I can tell you that for a fact, that he's done, and there'll be no Ben Brown action at the Kangaroos for David Noble's reign. But I'm keen to talk to him about, well, all on sundry, really, for the role that he's got the Kangaroos, because it's a very, very important time for that football club, full stop.
Yeah, I agree with that. What were your thoughts on Ben Buckley saying what he said in the full context of what he said? Did that concern you? Is it just words? What are your thoughts on all of that?
Well, let's have a listen to the chairman, just to paint the picture for our listeners out there.
Every club in the competition ultimately wants to win a premiership, and the best way to do that is to be a consistent performer in the top four. Time frames are always difficult things to nail down, but I think it's realistic that, you know, within that time period, we should be competing at that level, and that should be our ambition, and that should be the goal that we set ourselves as an organisation.
So within 2 or 3 years, he went on to say they should be contending for top four spots and ultimately a premiership. Now, every club plays to be a premiership team. So none of that's surprising. He did say time frames are interesting and difficult to sometimes assess. I would have stopped just there if I was Ben, I must admit. I don't know if it helps anyone. It's nice to have ambition, don't get me wrong. I'm all for ambition and having markers to achieve along the way. But within 2 to 3 years for a team that was sitting on the bottom of the ladder with half the list gone, I just don't know how you can forecast that in 2 or 3 years you'll be playing top four footy. I just don't know. If you had Norm Smith and Wayne Carey sitting at centre forward still, I just don't know if you can make that assessment so quickly. I would have just said, you know, it's really difficult, this competition. We've got a new coach in place who's clearly going to do his best and put a plan in place to help us build towards the ultimate goal of achieving a premiership. That's what I would have said. But I think it did point... give him a two-pointier focus for people to go back and assess and talk about for the next couple of years. And if it doesn't go that way, then it puts enormous pressure on everyone.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think it's okay to be ambitious, but it's not okay to be unrealistic, because it sets a reference point that Now everybody can sort of mark David Noble against because that's what the chairman thinks.
Yep.
And look, I don't... And the unfortunate reality about AFL football, and we've talked about this before, is it's like sport in general, I guess. It becomes a bit too much like politics, that if a politician says something, even if he's taken out of context or she's taken out of context, you're held to those comments. And that's my concern, that it was unnecessary to say such a thing. Of course, everyone is ambitious and everyone wants to play finals, but you've also got to be, I think, realistic. And I think that's where David Noble will be very good, because David Noble gets it. David Noble is excellent in the media, and David Noble doesn't get overexcited about things. And I think he has got the experience of what happened at Brisbane. And I don't think anyone thought that Brisbane would be competing for a premiership as quickly as they were after the crisis that they had. And they had a legitimate crisis with players wanting to leave left, right and centre. And he and Chris Fagan did turn it around very quickly. So, it might be unrealistic to talk about it that way, but who knows with North Melbourne. But I just thought it was... I just thought it was silly. I just thought it was unnecessary to be saying such a thing.
Yeah, and the Brisbane reference is valid, not only because David comes from the Brisbane model with Chris Fagan, what they've been able to do, but if you're going through their recent years, they were 2016 for those playing at home, they were 17th with 3 wins. 2017, they were 18th with 5 wins, so 2 more wins worse on the table. 2018, they were 15th with 5 wins, and 2019... they were second with 16 wins. So it can be done, because recent evidence would suggest that it can be done, and David's been a part of a system that has been able to do it. So there's that, but there's not too many examples of that happening in recent times. You've got to be out of the box. And depending on... Well, you haven't got half a list at the moment, so I'm just not sure you've got access to the information to make those sort of calls. So I'm a bit with you. Unnecessary. For the Kangas, but I'm all for ambition. Look, I am all for ambition. I think it's great to have markers and goals to be trying to achieve, but it did seem to be out of place, that comment.
But you did make an interesting comment, Half, at the start of the show by saying that it is a very important time for North Melbourne. Maybe I'm going to say something silly now. I often do, but...
That's everyone's turn.
They wouldn't want to stuff this up, North Melbourne, this time around. And I certainly don't think they have with the appointment of the coach, but I think they've got to be very careful. Yeah, I think they've got to be very careful over the next 3 to 5 years. I don't think North Melbourne can afford to be a club that gets stuck in the bottom four.
That would be a challenge, I think, if that's for a prolonged period of time. That would be a challenge, I think, for the footy club. Hopefully, David Noble says, well, don't worry about it. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And we'll sort it out.
Yeah, because I think there's a difference between, say, what Ben Buckley said, and we now sort of, let's make it about Essendon, with what Paul Brasher has said as chairman of Essendon. He has come out really, really strongly, but what he's been able to do is he's been able to really resonate with the fans, because he has spoken in a way that a lot of the fans can relate to and can connect with. Now, that has also put a lot of pressure on the football department and a lot of people at Essendon with the comments that he's made based on the review that he's gone through. But it has created a pressure as well at Essendon. But maybe at Essendon that pressure is required based on what they've been able to or not been able to achieve over the last 14 or 15 years. They're stuck in the yellow zone and they've got to make a stand. And I think what Paul Brasher has done is fair enough. Maybe not so what Ben Buckley did yesterday.
In fairness, they're both coming from very different ends of the spectrum. Well,
but that's my point.
More different ends. Yeah.
Yes, and that's my point. I think that Essendon has needed that rattling of the cage for quite a while.
The Bombers, they are a story.
Why would you want to go there?
Oh, that's great timing from our man on the buttons there, Craig.
He is a Essendon supporter, Dan Andrews.
Well, that makes sense.
That is his club of choice.
That makes sense. That makes a whole... Why didn't they just say that at the start of all this? We would have understood exactly why things were happening the way they were happening. Good luck to David Noble, says Salty and Tassie, but let's be honest, they won't even win a game next year. Lost too many by their choice and couldn't possibly play finals in the next 5 years. Oh, no, they'll win games, Salty, I reckon. They'll win lots of games. Well, not lots. They'll win a few games next year. The Kangas, finals in the next 5 years? Well, I don't know. Who knows? I just don't think you can forecast those things. I'm just... I'm not sure you can sit there and say categorically either way, we'll be rubbish or we'll be good. It's the game's too hard. The game's too hard and things change so quickly. And I think the fact that they have eliminated the bottom end of their list does say, along with the fact that they've got a new coach, albeit not by design, that they are ready for a transformational period. Like, it's not just a build. This is transformational. This needs to be transformational. They've got the new facility upgrade that they've got coming as well. So there's all this good energy, good positive vibes coming through from the Kangaroos. Now that they've got a bit more stability from a leadership perspective with David Noble. And they'll get the players that they want, and they'll build them up over the next couple of years, and they'll be the team that David Noble wants them to be. But I just don't know how you forecast what it's going to look like. It's just, I think it's folly.
Well, and there's not too many clubs that go through a situation where you start a season with a different senior coach 3 years in a row, which is what North Melbourne will do. That just doesn't happen. So that's going to be interesting in itself to see how that plays out. But what they have got this year, though, that perhaps Reece Shaw didn't have when he first started, is that they will have a very different list. Reece sort of went in with a very similar list to what Brad had the year before. Yeah. And sort of Reece was working with a different game plan, but essentially the same sort of list, whereas David Noble's list is obviously going to be a hell of a lot younger. Can I throw something else at you?
Throw something at me.
What were your thoughts on David Warner coming out and being very public about who he should be opening the batting with? Now, I know the questions were asked, and so he got put in that sort of situation, but do you think that he should have a say in who opens the batting with him for the first test against India, or is that completely out of his hands and irrelevant?
Let's have a listen to David Warner, just for those playing at home.
I've batted time with Joe Burns before in the middle. I know exactly what we're about when we're out there. As I said, building a partnership and building a bond. Obviously, we won a lot of games last year. So for me, you know, you don't really break something that's actually working. To get into the Australian team, you've got to put numbers on the board. And Will's an exceptional talent and a great player, and for years to come, especially. He's in the right mind frame at the moment. And as I said, you know, this next sort of game, A game, is probably going to be the tell-all. Could be the bat-off for that position.
David Warner there speaking about the opening conundrum for the Australian selectors. Oh, look, I got it. He's going to get asked about it because he's on the wireless or wherever he was yesterday doing the rounds. But I think it's a bit like Whitey. I think it's a bit like asking a footballer, how's the coach going? Coach under pressure, has he coached you? Oh, no, he's going great, guns. Never been better. Or a teammate who's out of form, a high-profile teammate who's out of form, should he be playing this week? Of course he should. He's one of the great players, and we need him every single week. So he's protecting the incumbent, and you can't... Because if he comes out and says, nah, he's got to go, and he stays, the selectors say he stays, well, then what does that do to the chemistry of the partnership and the morale within the team? I don't think there's any other option for him to say what he said there, I must admit, David Warner. In my view, it's a wasted question with David Warner because you know the answer you're going to get.
Yeah, he did go on and say a bit more, though, than what we just heard then. I'm just... I'll rephrase the question and re-ask half of it. Do you think the selectors should be asking David Warner their thoughts on whether Joe Burns should stay in the team or whether he shouldn't stay in the team? Well, not so much whether he shouldn't stay in the team. So do you think, David, you're going to play better if you've got Joe Burns out there compared to someone else?
No. Now, my view is that the selectors select the team. They can converse with the skipper. And David's a player of leadership at the Australian cricket team, I suppose. But in the end, it's not his call. And you know what he's going to say. He's not going to say, back to my point before, he's not going to say, nah, get him out, mate. He's driving me bananas. I can't work with him. He's not going to say that. So I don't
might.
Think that... Well, he probably... Actually, if anyone would. You're probably right. You're probably right.
Yeah.
No, I don't think there's any value in asking David, I must admit.
Yeah, so we'll go through his figures because Joe Burns, just going back to last summer, because I think that's the only stats that are relevant. He made 97 in the first innings against Pakistan in Brisbane. And then he went on and made 4 against Pakistan in Adelaide. They only batted once there. And then in the series against New Zealand, again at home, he made 9-53, a duck and 35, and 18-40. So they are his figures from last summer as an opening batsman. Now, collectively, the opening partnership was, you know, was solid because Warner had such an incredible summer. But I don't think he necessarily did enough to say that he's definitely the opening batsman of the next 12 months. And then when you then line that up against what he did in the Sheffield Shield in the three matches that he played, 10-11 against South Australia, 29-0 against New South Wales, and 7 against Tasmania. And it wasn't so much those runs, which obviously aren't very many. The way he went out was a little bit worrying, going really hard at the ball. Technically, there was a couple of issues there. Against the Indian bowling attack, I'm not sure you can go in with someone that is out of form. And I would say he's out of form.
Yep. No, and I think at the start of a summer, I don't think there's any point going back to the end of the last summer when you're looking at performances. You know, because it's so far away. And then you have your most recent first-class record, as you just highlighted, being quite poor. Now, I don't know how you stay in the team on those numbers. Whoever comes in, that's whatever. Now, whoever that might be. Now, obviously, Wilco Pekowski is the one that's been mooted as the possible change, should that be the case, and the selectors don't pick Joe Burns. But take away who might come in, you look at that form, you go, well, I don't care who you're playing, Zimbabwe or Afghanistan or New Zealand or India. You're not playing well enough. So I think it's pretty clear-cut selection decision from the selectors. Now, whether or not they go with that or the money in the bank system is strong enough and he can have a few deposits or, you know, a few withdrawals of poor form and the selectors still let him play, I don't know how that system works within the team. But I just think the way that he's played of recent times, particularly in the last month or 2 months, he's out of form. He just can't play.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if Will Pekowski didn't have the mental health issues in the past, and if Will Pekowski had batted more as an opener rather than just the two games he's done, albeit he's made double centuries in both of those games, but he's not a 2 or 3 year opening batsman, I think the decision is very easy. And so I think that's what makes things a little bit complicated. But they've just got to be a bit careful, Australia. I think that to carry a player against India is not ideal. I don't think they'd want to be doing that, particularly that first match against Adelaide as a day-night affair. You know, Bumrah, whoever it is, they're going to really test the technique of the opening batsman of Australia and the top order of Australia. They've just got to make sure that they aren't 1 for 4, you know, every test match.
That would be a disaster, being 1 for 4 every test match. Well, David in Brony wants to talk about this. He wants to have a chat to you, Whitey. Good morning, David.
Good morning, boys. I just feel that there's been a bit of a hatchet job done on Will Pekowski. I mean, why would you want to go into the side with the attitude that's been put out? There's certainly been a feeling of saying, oh, we're staying with the incumbent, blah, 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 blah. Now we get Warner saying, oh, I want to bat with Burns. I mean, he's selected now. They put Will Pekowski, who's got... had mental issues, fair enough, but you know, you're putting him in a very difficult position if the selectors then pick him when they were getting all this feedback.
I do think, David, though, there's not many other things that they could say. Selectors might have a few other lines up their sleeves, but the Dave Warner one, I'm not sure that he was ever going to say too much else. But it's interesting the way it might impact Will, taking it from that angle, Whitey, the way that information, that feedback might be absorbed by Will Pekowski and affect his state of affairs leading into a series. Now, he might be having different conversations with the selectors that we're not hearing publicly, which I'm sure is probably happening. But it would be interesting how all these conversations, particularly from David, from the selectors, might affect the way that he goes about it.
Well, the interesting thing is that the whole reason why this discussion has come up in the last sort of 24 to 48 hours has been Justin Langer was the one that sort of really pumped up the relationship and the partnership between Burns and Warner and sort of spoke about the fact that, well, he doesn't see necessarily the reason for there to be change. Now, this happens all the time. And the reality is for Will for Will, I guess to test his... I hope everyone takes this the right way, but to test Will's mental health is that he has to deal with this sort of discussion. He has to deal with this sort of commentary and intensity around will he or won't he and who's the right combination, because that's... You need to be able to deal with that sort of pressure. And there's been a lot of players over the years at international level that haven't been able to deal with that scrutiny. And they've completely, I used the word yesterday, they've completely combusted and we never saw them again at test level. So, and then some didn't cope with it overly well. They go back a level and then they come back a much stronger mentally stronger player, not just someone with technique flaws. So these are things that Will is going to have to deal with. My personal view is that when he comes in, he should be coming in batting at 5 and 6. That's what I think he should be doing, because that's the natural apprenticeship that a test player should go through, rather than put him straight into the fire, particularly someone like Will who is so young. But at the same point, he's a very special, very, very special talent. He got thrown in at number 3 when he first played for Victoria, and there wasn't any problems there.
Mm. We'll see. David, thank you for your call. Chris in Ascot Vale is taking us back to the Kangaroos conversation. Good morning, Chris.
Yeah, good morning, guys. Look, just with Ben Buckley's comment, I haven't got an issue with him, because it's more about this is our aspiration. And to be honest, the year we had this year was... I mean, you know, we got a sugar hit when Rhys first came on board, played really well. I think we beat Port Adelaide by about 10 goals in the last game of 2019. And then Hub Life, it just, you know, we all saw what happened there. The side fell apart, Cunnington got injured. So, you know, there is a strong possibility the side will play really well next year under, you know, a different coach, you know. Obviously, guy's been around the traps a while. So for Ben to voice that sort of aspiration, I don't think that's unrealistic or it's putting too much pressure on the coach. And David Noble has said as much.
So I'm hearing that you're probably a North Melbourne supporter?
Because you got it right, Whitey.
Yeah. So I'm interested in your thoughts as a fan. What would be a par score next year with wins?
I'd be looking at 6-8.
Okay, because I think that's a fair and reasonable thing to say in the sense that we can often react very quickly to what we last saw. But if there are times with North Melbourne, as you said, when Cunnington was playing and others were playing, even earlier last year, that, you know, maybe you beat the Giants up at Sydney, that there was reason to be optimistic, because internally North Melbourne is very optimistic about their players from the ages of say 19 to 23. A lot of which we haven't seen a lot of. They are very optimistic about that group. So I reckon what you'll find is what the media, whether that matters or not, what the media thinks of what North Melbourne is capable of next year and what North Melbourne thinks they're capable of are going to be two very different things. So I think that's what's going to be an interesting, I guess, narrative about the Kangaroos next year. They think internally they'll go better than what external people think.
Well, everyone does, funnily enough. No one ever thinks they're going to get worse than what the public...
I know, that's true.
But unfortunately, there's got to be teams at the top, there's got to be teams at the bottom, and whoever fills those spots is, well, it's up for grabs, as we know. UK correspondent Russ, good morning.
Hi, boys, how are you?
Going very well, thanks. Liverpool have been proven to be unbeatable for quite some time now. 64 unbeaten games at Anfield. It's a pretty good performance. What's the longest stretch, Russ? Is that it?
Cool. Yeah, it must be. It must be up there. Certainly Premier League stats, I would say. Yeah, they've been imperious, haven't they, for 2 or 3 years now. You know, they obviously won the league last year. The year before, were just pipped by Man City. They're up there again straight away, and they've got a horrendous amount of injuries at the minute. You know, there's quite a few players out, Van Dijk, Salah. Most of the back four actually are out, and it was a great result against Leicester City, 3-0. And it was an incredible game. But some of the chances that were in the game were unbelievable. You know, it could have been 5 or 6. But they're showing signs again, aren't they, of being right in amongst it. And I think if anyone finishes above them this year, I think they'll be champions.
Well, I was going to ask you, because they were not off their tucker, but they certainly weren't as dominant at the start of this season. They were. Last season, of course, where they were just this super team. Are they back on track a little bit, even though they've got those injury concerns?
I would say so, yeah. There's signs of it. I mean, they had that horrendous 7-2 thrashing at Aston Villa, didn't they? Which nobody saw coming. They had a draw with the local rivals, Everton, who were going well at the time. And then since then, you know, they've picked up some really good results. They drew at Man City. But, they beat Sheffield United and West Ham at home, which you would expect them to. And then they put, three past Leicester, who themselves are having a good season in fourth. But, I would say they're right up there. I mean, it's a good sign, isn't it? It's a sign of a good team that are doing well, winning threes and picking up results with, six, seven of their probably regular players out injured, captains out, Jordan Henderson. It all augurs well for Jurgen Klopp. I think he had a little moan up, didn't he, after the game about the scheduling and he had a little pop at Sky Sports and the people that arranged the fixtures. So, but what can you do? It's a shortened season and everyone in the squad has got a muck in and if Jurgen Klopp's moaning, then there's no hope for any of us, is there?
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about that, Russ, because I thought it was really interesting, some of the comments he made, because I think it's relevant across most sports about this tight schedule, having to play two, sometimes three times in a week because of the demands of the television schedule. Or is it the television schedule? Is it just the reality of the schedule in a coronavirus time? How do you see it?
Well, I mean, the season was, I think, started a month later, didn't it? Maybe 5-6 weeks. So they've got to cram it all in. They've got to look ahead and look at the Euros, the European Championships that will be in June. So, they need to finish 3-4 weeks before that. To give lads a chance to get with their countries. They're in the Champions League, they're in the FA Cup, there'll be, the League Cup, all those sort of cups that they'll be in. So there's a number of competitions for the big boys especially, and squads will be stretched. There's it's not just injuries now as well. You've got people testing positive for the coronavirus and they've obviously got to isolate for a certain amount of time. It's tough times, difficult. But I'm sure, obviously we will get through it, but it's some teams will be affected more than others. Is it a level playing field? I think you've just got to, accept it might happen and you might have to play games with less people for one reason or another and just get on with it, get through it, and hopefully, your guys on the pitch will do the job for you. And I think, certainly in Liverpool's case, that they're doing really well at the minute despite all the injuries. Obviously, there are demands from the TV companies and, they probably call the shots at the end of the day because, they pay them. That's where the big bucks come from. So, got to adhere to it and get on with it and get through it, I think. So, the sooner the season's over, really, the better, I think, because, it's just try and get back to a normal season in 21-22.
Now, we know that the summer of cricket hasn't gone the way of our man Adam White just at the moment, Jim. He's building. He's building through. It's a long season, and he's going to build his form and dominate through the back end for the mighty Warrandyte Cricket Club.
I hear there's a bit of a Joe Burns, Will Bukowski scenario going at Warrandyte. So he's the incumbent, but there's a young kid who's just piles of runs, and White refuses to give up his spot.
If only that was the case.
My understanding is Joe Burns trains a little bit more often than our man.
Yeah, that can be a setback. No training.
But I'm not surprised to hear that you've heard those whispers from the Warrandyte Cricket Club. What about this though? Geelong City. Have you played against Geelong City? For Geelong City, Jim?
No, not for Geelong City. Played against them quite a number of times, especially as a junior growing up.
Well, their captain, Jack Driver, had a scenario thrown at him on the weekend. He was playing against Bell Park. Your boys? You're a Bell Park boy?
No, Bell Park footy. I was at Geelong West, the Rams, the Geelong West Cricket Club down there.
Oh, no. Okay. He had a challenge, and I want to find out what he did. He's one of our local legends today on the Breakfast Club. He's been good enough to join us. Jack, good morning.
Good morning, boys.
Did you ever play against Jim, just by the way, Jack?
No chance. Yeah. Never that good.
Never that
you
good?
Forget well, you forget how old I am, half.
No, well, that's... Whitey's still playing. I'm still playing. We're old men. We do this sort of stuff. Now, Jack, a story has come across our desk that we thought we had to get to the bottom of. You were chasing, I think, the Bell Park Cricket Club made 193. And you were 8 for 170 at the start of the final over. 8 for 170. 23 down with 2 wickets remaining. What happened from there, Jack?
There was a run out the last ball of the previous over, so new batter Marzi come in at 10, and I just said that try and get something on and we'll sneak a single, and unfortunately he missed it and got bowled.
Hang on, let's go back a step. Whose fault was the run out?
It was probably mine, because I was on strike and I couldn't get off strike the last ball the previous over, and the guy at the other end sort of obviously thought that we would be running, and I just said no, so he was sort of the sacrificial lamb.
So you've toasted him in that one.
Yeah,
and then your new man, Adam Marsland's come in and got bowled first ball in the last over. So you're 9 down.
Yeah.
What happens then?
I just said the same thing to number 11. I said, just try and get something on it, and I'll get down the other end, and then we'll see what happens.
Can I ask you then, you get down there, you take strike, you're just looking for long on, mid wicket, was there a short boundary? Like, what was your thinking in your head?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably a 60-metre hit straight, and it was slightly with the wind as well, so they're not the biggest hit. I just thought if he pitches it somewhere where I can get underneath it, then I'll just swing as hard as I can and try and hit him straight over, mid on, mid off.
So you needed 21 runs off 4 balls. Now, from my calculations, there's only 2 ways to do that. 3 sixes and a 4, or 4 sixes. That's the only way you can get there. Did you think... What happened in the first 4 balls to go, what happened?
The first 6 was just like a good length, and sort of rocked back and hit it over mid-on. And then pretty much exactly the same with the second 6. And then he bowled a wide. Yeah, so our umpire called a wide, so that was great. pretty much exactly the same. He just kept bowling a good length, and I just kept rocking back and hitting it over mid-on. and then the last one was a bit wider, and it went over mid-off, so it was pretty exciting.
We know that this time of year, normally, without COVID, but still going on, there's a lot of weddings on this time of year, and it can affect local sport. Often you know from a cricketing perspective that who's going to a wedding, because they'll get out at the top of the order gym and they'll go as hard as they can for the first 10 overs and then they've got to go. Often happens in local cricket. When someone's going hard early, oh, he's got a wedding. And that's what happens. But in the world of soccer, I don't know how it works, but the Queensland Lions FC goalkeeper, Luke Boriam, had to get to a wedding on the weekend, but he had to play in a game. The problem was it was his wedding. And he's found a way to put it together, and he joined us on the line this morning. Luke, good morning.
Good morning, boys.
Mate, this is one of the great stories. Is it true that you had your wedding on the weekend? So you got married and then played in a semi-final afterwards. Is that right?
100% correct. Yeah. COVID has done it again.
How did you get this past your beautiful wife now, Alan? How did she say yes to this, that you're allowed to get married and then go and play soccer on the back of it?
A very understanding wife. As most people know, us goalkeepers, we're weird enough as it is, and I thought I'd throw something even weirder into the mix that usually doesn't happen either.
Well, I've never come across anything quite like this, where you play the game and then go to your own wedding. Go to somebody else's wedding. That's all right, because anything could happen, Luke. Were you concerned at any stage that something might go wrong?
Logistically, we planned it to make sure nothing did go wrong. At the end of the day, nothing went wrong. I did take a knock in the game, but everyone was very, very calm, thinking, oh, yeah, he's just at his usual antics again, just rolling around on the ground, wasting a bit of time here. But no, everything went well, and we were able to party on after the game, I suppose.
So the best part for me, I must admit, I followed this on Twitter a little bit across the weekend. The best part for me was seeing Alan sitting in her wedding dress in the... in the members area, I must be there for the Lions or wherever you're playing, watching you play. Like, it was one of the great scenes of all time. Didn't even get a chance to change or worry about that. She was there in her dress watching you play. This must be true love, Luke.
she's pretty committed. Straight from the ceremony / mini reception, straight to the game. The club there, we played at Peninsula Power. They were awesome. They organised just a little area there for all our friends and family that were coming to the game as well, just to sit and watch. So she had her little area there, and she was, yeah, just in the dress. It was pretty funny looking at her from the field in a wedding dress.
That is hilarious. That is. And did so you have any looks from the opposition? Did they know? Oh, they obviously knew because they set it up for you.
Yeah, they set it up. We ended up played the last. Our last picture of the game was against them as well, coincidentally, the week before. So I knew a few people there at Peninsula, and they organised that for us, knowing that we'd be playing them again in the semi-final the following weekend. So, yeah, it was awesome on their behalf.
And how did you play? How would you describe your performance based on the fact that you'd already had a performance earlier that day?
good question. I thought I went all right. There was a few dodgy moments early on in the game. I suppose my head is probably in another space at the time, but we got through it in the end and got the victory. So that was the most important thing.
How many goals did you let in?
Just the one. Just the one.
And was that your fault, or was it? It's usually the defender's fault, and the goalkeeper puts his arms up and starts arguing with all the all your sort of defenders. How did the goal go through?
It's never the goalkeeper's fault. We all know that. We all know that. It was a sort of a little bit of a reaction 101 sort of thing. So I'm definitely blaming it on the defenders.
Now, one of the problems, not only was that, well, yeah, they scored four, so there's no dramas, just letting one through wide. No dramas there for the Queensland Lions FC. One of the problems now is you've made the final, so I imagine this affects the honeymoon as well, does it?
Yeah, honeymoon is now officially on hold. we've got the big GF this weekend, this Saturday, so... that had to go on the back burner, unfortunately, but I'm sure we'll try and manage and work something out.
This has got disaster written all over it, because you know what's going to happen, Luke? You're going to owe Ellen. You're going to owe her big time. She's going to be cashing in some chips a little bit later on. Are you a bit concerned about that?
Oh, she's got a lot in her hand, put it that way. She's got a lot up her sleeve now. She can pretty much ask whatever she wants, and yeah, it's a bit unfortunate, but hey, it's a sacrifice she made. I might have to make a few sacrifices myself.
I see it very differently, Daniel. I think that Luke, the precedent has been set. You've got that as your reference point now. That, you know, it was allowed once. You're allowed to do it all the time now.
With a range of different options, different things that I can. That I can do, you reckon, in the coming years?
Absolutely. What you got to do is, the key is you've got to preach consistency. You can have a consistent relationship. You've set the level. We just stick to a consistent level.
I like that.
What do you do, number 10?
What do I do for a living?
Yes.
I'm a comedian, stuff.
Off. Come on.
You're a comedian?
I'm a comedian, stuff.
The most serious bloke I've met.
That doesn't say a lot about my comedy then, does it?
Tell me a joke.
I'm a 46-year-old father of two. I'm a comedian, and I've signed up to this.
Was that meant to be a joke? All right, relax. You're a comedian.
I am.
I would never have guessed that.
Fair to say it was an inauspicious start for Merrick Watts on SAS Australia. He's one of the recruits, Channel 7's hit series. It's the finale tonight. And he's still there standing, the funny man who the staff didn't think was that funny at the time. I wonder how he's feeling right about now. He joins us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Merrick.
Good morning, Jess. Look, I was just starting to get over it. Then I heard that audio and it all flashed back. It's PTSD. That's the worst thing that happened to me on the entire course. I'd rather get punched up by Mitchell Johnson again.
Well, there's been a few things that have happened along the way. Firstly, going back to it all, to the start of it, which we sort of got a bit of it in that little play on, you're 46, father of two. Why did you sign up to this?
Look, you know, I do like a challenge because I'm an idiot. But also, too, I knew that, you know, it's one of those things that just galvanises you mentally and physically. And I thought at that stage, my confidence was down. And, you know, in footy parlance, boys, if you would understand, of course, is that there's sometimes you can have a confidence player who plays their best footy when they are absolutely at their confidence peak. And when they're not actually much good to the team. And that's how I was feeling about a year ago, that I'd lost my confidence. And I need my confidence to perform my best at everything I do. So I knew that if I did this, I'd be able to get my confidence back. And it did. It gave me that.
Merrick, you just touched on it tests your physical and, I guess, your mental capabilities. What surprised you the most? Was it the actual physical nature of getting through sort of a day physically, or was it the mental draining that this sort of exercise takes on?
Yeah, look, the physical challenges are pretty tough, but they are just that. They're just physical challenges. What it is it's the resilience to take day by day, knowing that every single day is just getting harder and harder, and you're sleep deprived, you're calorie deprived on a point where it's just ridiculous. You know, you might be burning 6,000 to 10,000 calories in a day, but you might only eat 1,000 calories, so you're just in deficit all the time. And, you know, compounded with that is the unknown. You never know what you're about to go and do. You never know where you're at or what's going on or even what you're actually being tested for. Sometimes you think you're being tested for something, but it's actually something else that they're looking for in it. So it's about being constantly switched on. So it's a combination of the mental and the physical, but don't underestimate the cold. The cold is just brutal. Like, you can't see it, but we were always cold.
You're in pretty good shape yourself, but what physically really shocked you or challenged you? Was it, you know, lugging the backpack around? If you had your time to train for it, would it be hit the weights? Would it be do more running, cardio sort of stuff?
No, look, I didn't do any gym work at all. I reckon I went to the gym about three times in my entire preparation. I did most of my stuff at home. I packed up a backpack with 40 kilograms and went for a 31-kilometre hike for 6 hours with no food. That was probably the toughest preparation I did for it, and that was probably the smartest preparation I did for it, because it's actually about how much pain you can handle. That's what it's really about. Like, get to that point where you're not only exhausted, you're actually in pain and telling your body that you need to drive harder. And I think for me, for the most physical one would have been in the snow. I think that was the hardest for us all when we're driving up through the snow. And it just gets to the point where you have to make that decision that you are going to burn yourself right to the wick to get to what you want to achieve, which for me was to be at the front of the pile at the front of the pack and to lead it through.
So, Merrick, was it intimidating being part of a group where so many of them were professional athletes and you're a comedian, to say, well, how can I stack up against athletes? I mean, how did you go through that process mentally?
Well, let's qualify this by saying I'm not sure that I'm actually professional at anything. I don't think I've got any qualifications. I'm a half-wit and I've just been 11 twice at Elton Heights. I'm not exactly formidable at anything. So, yeah, it's pretty intimidating when you're standing next to an Olympian, somebody who's represented their country, and one of the best AFL players in the Women's League. It's pretty full-on being around them. You've got a rally driver who's extremely switched on and very capable. And Shannon Ponson, who spent his entire life in the fitness circle. So, yeah, I was the only person without a sports or fitness background. But I didn't really think about that. I just thought about what I could do and how far I'd push myself. And I in my mind, when I went in there, it was quitting was never an option. I was either going to drive forward and end it, or I was going to break in half. Those are the two options.
Because I must confess, and we've talked about this, the show on our show quite a lot, I'm a bit obsessed about it, just in, and particularly the role that you played about mental strength and sort of, you know, doing things that you perhaps didn't think you were capable of being able to do, and then seeing others that mentally wilted. It was quite extraordinary, ones that you wouldn't have expected.
Yeah, and that's what it is. Like, they told us that, you know, before we went in, it's probably 80% mental, 20% physical. And there's two elements of the mentality behind it. Is one is, you know, pushing your body beyond what it's comfortable with, pushing it beyond, you know, once the actual survival mechanisms of your body kick in and is screaming for you to stop. It's not even about being competitive anymore. It's begging you to stop doing it because you're harming it. And you override that circuitry and say, no, I'm going to push on. That's a big part of the mental game. And the other part of the mental game is just saying, there is nothing that is going to make me quit. There's nothing more important to me than completing this course. And that you go in with that. You learn the other stuff. You learn the perseverance when you're in there. But you go in with an attitude of, I will die on this course before I will quit.
That seemed extreme, Merrick.
Yeah, well, look, as Ann Middle pointed out, I'm not very funny. I went in there and parked all of the jokes and just went, I'll do comedy when I'm finished, thanks. What I'll do is I'll just do this now. I'm not very ambidextrous mentally. I can't do two things at once. So I went in there with, you know, a kill or be killed kind of attitude, and then when I'm out, now, you know, I'm back to myself.
Just on that too, that meant what Ant said to you. I mean, there must be no worse question in the history of the world for a comedian to get someone come up to you and say, tell us a joke.
Honestly, I would have been happy if he hit me with a shovel. What's sad though, too, fellas, you'd reckon that I would have thought about that question coming to me before I went in. You know, I had 8 months to prepare, and at no stage did I think that I would be asked the most obvious question. Just shows you how you can prepare too much in one area and not enough in another.
So, Merrick, is it true that you were desperate to do this? That this is something you almost sought out the producers to say, or through your manager, I want to do this? Because it seemed that it's something you've always wanted to do.
Yeah, look, I actually think I might have been the first person to sign on. I found that the day that I read a trade magazine saying that it had been commissioned for Australia, I was already a fan of the show. I loved the UK version. And so I literally rang my manager immediately and said, you've got to get me on the show. And she said, but you don't do reality television programs. This is not like going to the jungle and somebody making you eat a cockroach. This is 10 times everything. Apparently I'd already been shortlisted as one of the names. So they obviously, you know, the producers already went around the circuit and had a look at all the celebrities they thought were pretty unhinged, and my name was at the top of that unhinged list. And from there, it just kind of happened pretty quickly.
Magnificent. Well, it's been great to watch. And now tonight's episode, there's the finale tonight. You've got five left. You've got rally car champ Molly Taylor, AFLW player Sabrina Frederick, James Magnusson, world champion swimmer, yourself and Nick Cummins. Of course, the Honey Badger from Rugby Union, which our listeners would know quite well. When you first got in and you worked out who was who in the zoo, Mary, who did you think would still be there that wasn't there in the last day?
That's a very good question. Look, to be honest, I reckon after about a week, you kind of figure out who's going to be there on the last day. I think, you know, the group of us that are there towards on that last hurdle, we kind of had a fair idea that we would be there, to be honest.
Yep.
It's just, you can see it in people's eyes. It's a funny thing, and I was told this before I went on. One day, you will wake up in the morning and you'll just see somebody's body language. And they will be down, their eyes will be down, something won't be right, and you'll know it. And you know that they are gone, that the crack has started, and the DS are going to drive a crowbar into that crack, and that's exactly what they do. And you can just see it. So with Shannon, I was surprised. I was surprised that I could see that he was suffering. I could see the hypothermia had knocked him around badly. So when he did VW, I was very surprised. But I wasn't surprised that it happened. Just that it happened at that time. We're all shocked. You know, we're all getting ready to jump off, and he just said, I can't do it. So everybody has a breaking point. It's just about where it is.
Now, this is a question that's come from my wife, who is obsessed with this show. Farass. is he as bad as what he came across on the TV? Will you still be mates with him? We need to know what happened to Farass.
Look, you know, Farass has his own understanding of the world, and you know, good luck to him. He's got a very unique viewpoint on reality. Unfortunately, it's not actually reality. Otherwise, it'd be great. He takes his own reality, Farass. You know, obviously, he and I had a spouse on the show, and then he kind of continued it off the show, which I'm not really interested in engaging with him on it. But Farass is very, very physically capable, but his problem with me and the problem with himself and the problem with that course is his attitude. And you've got to have the right attitude. If you want to get through to that final day, to the chicken up, and you want to be there, you've got to have a different attitude. That's what's required. You go there to play their game. You don't go there to play your own.
Speaking of action, there'll be plenty of that at Arden Street for the next little while as David Noble, the new coach of the Kangas, tries to build a football club to launch into the top four into a premiership window as soon as humanly possible. I'm sure that's the aim. He's been good enough to join us, the new coach, on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, David. Congratulations.
Thanks, Half. It's a pleasure to join you.
And it's great to have you on the program. I know you've been doing the rounds a bit, so you're probably sick of answering all the same questions. We'll try and find a few new ones for you. But it seems a long way from game number one in North Hobart for you, for the Fitzroy Football Club, when you lost by 157 points, David, which I found out yesterday, to be a senior coach of a footy club.
Yes. It's for those numerologists out there, Half, I wore 38 at Fitzroy, and I'm the 38th Kangaroos coach.
Oh, well, there you go. There you go.
There you go.
I know you played for a couple of games there at the Roys, and you're North Hobart Premiership player as well, and you played a lot of footy as well as coach. But was this always the end goal?
It was. Once I'd sort of moved into, I had a couple of years at Upway Tacoma, which, you know, got me started in the coaching area, mate. And I played there and was able to influence the game a little bit by playing, but I was then intrigued by how you could actually help people with coaching and moved into that area. And I probably set myself a 15-year goal to have enough experience by that time frame to then compete and vie for an AFL role. And that time frame probably worked when I was at Adelaide. I spoke to the Crows at that time about a succession plan with Neil Craig, and that didn't pan out. And at that point, I moved into sort of the admin list management area.
So you're at the Bulldogs and Adelaide, and you mentioned Upway Tacoma, you coach Glenelg as well in the Sandful. What did you learn about your ability to bring people together and make them better? When did you know you could do it?
I think when I went to Canberra, working with young talent, parting on that knowledge, learning, very early on about relationship building, understanding, people's commonalities, I guess, and what makes them tick, and that sort of started. I'm inquisitive by nature. I sort of think outside the dots from time to time, and that's always got me thinking. And I think what's rounded me out, mate, in the last 8 years is as a manager, I continue to coach, but I coach people at a different level, probably a deeper, more relationship-based environment than what I had done at coaching, and I'll take that skill set with me to the Kangaroos.
David, congratulations on the appointment. I think it's a really important appointment for AFL football, that you can do it different ways to get to that senior AFL coaching position, and I reckon you will do it differently. Do you think you will?
Yeah, I think so, Adam. I've had a lot of time to sort of reflect through this process, and I got asked yesterday, coach, manager, coach. I think it's the manager, coach, for me at the moment. I'm even sort of thinking how we set up our match day functionality, how we manage the day. We'll still need to coach the players, but, what that looks like, where I position, how we set up our learning and our education processes. I agree. I think it's a different dynamic. I mean, I've got the coaching acumen there, but I've learned a different approach and a different skill set in that management piece.
Yeah, and I think that's why I'm so excited about it, just as an observer, because I think if you do it differently, there's going to be a lot of other AFL clubs are going to be watching very carefully and closely as to how you set things up, because you've kind of got a bit of a blank canvas, I guess.
We have. Hopefully they're watching us closely, maybe, because we'll be coming at them each week. it's like that. The discussions, I haven't quite got through the whole list yet, but the discussions over the weekend, and I touched base with a couple of other guys last night, the enthusiasm and the energy for our group to learn has been infectious, I'd have to say, in the first couple of days.
And so I want to sort of take you back to that experience with Brisbane and what you're able to do with Chris so quickly. We were talking about this on our program earlier this morning, that I guess you can't really put a bar on what's possible at any club based largely on what you're able to do as a sort of a duo at Brisbane.
Yeah, I agree. I think the opportunity for people to continue to feel like they can improve and they've got the framework within that environment. You'll hear me talk a lot about the growth mindset, being positive, allow people to sort of fall over, fail, pick them up. That was the key aspect. You know, it was a collective, both from a staff and a playing perspective, that the avenue and the direction that we wanted to take was that, you know, let people get better and be a guide there to help them, you know, take that pathway.
David, can I ask you about the process? I'm a bit fascinated by the process, I must admit. What, when they come to you or however that connection first happens and you're first in front of the panel, what do they want from you? What are they trying to hear or want to hear from you to articulate the message that you are the right person for them?
Well, there's obviously a framework that they work within half. They've got their, I guess they sit and work out what their requirements are with the skill set that they're after. Then they go looking for people that fit that skill set. But I think predominantly they're after the a person of character. I think that's, you know, what I guess, you know, I initially started with. That was, you know, this is who I am. This is where I've come from. This is what I stand for. And then I think you go through the detail around. The first piece was probably more around the environmental structure. I mean, they're things like motivation, leadership, culture, high performance. I mean, there's those pieces. And then you get deeper into the process and then you delve into the game plan and the structure and the more physical components of how you're going to bring that together.
And were there any curveballs that threw at you that you weren't quite ready for, or you've been around long enough to know that everything that was coming at you would come at you?
No, there was a couple in there that I thought were really, really great questions to make you think. I think if you're in there and you've got a clear understanding of what you're after, I think what the questions are there to do is to try to unsettle you in regards to, is that actually your belief? Do you actually, are you going to hold your line in that particular direction around what you believe a strong piece of your culture is? You know, is it absolutely, you know, relationship, trust and honesty based? So, yeah, there was a couple of really good curly ones in there that really made you stop and think.
So we would have been talking to you probably only 2 or 3 weeks ago about list management strategy at Brisbane and how the Lions were going to go that next step next year. When the North Melbourne position became open, did it prick your interest straight away and go, oh, maybe, or was it until you were contacted that it hadn't even really been on your radar?
Probably until Roosie picked up the phone. That was the point, the couple of calls that I'd had from him that really pricked my interest. I knew it was there and it was like, it'd be interesting to see what they do. You know, I'd been mentioned earlier, but I hadn't been contacted by the club and I wasn't sitting at home, you know, waiting for the phone to ring at all. You know, the week prior, I think I was on another station, you know, talking about CEO direction and the like.
Yeah.
But when Paul picked up the phone and said, no, I think there's a skill set there that, you know, is applicable to a senior coaching role, it made me delve fairly deeply at him inside to really work out, well, is this something that I really want to let go? It's because that would probably be it forever. So I reached down and had a good look at it and decided to put my hand up for it.
Yeah, so I think it's really exciting. So I want to know then, how much of a disadvantage do you think it is that you missed out on that opportunity through list management with the players that were let go, but also in regards to whether you kept Ben Brown or not, what you were going to do with draft picks, etc. You've kind of missed that little zone. Is that going to be a disadvantage or not?
I don't think so. And on the basis that I've worked with Scotty Clayton previously, Mark Finnegan's been around, you know, the club now for a long time. I've liked the way that Glenn Luff has thought and spent a lot of time with Luffy in the past. So looking from afar, I was very confident in the direction that I felt the group was taking. You know, Brady Rawlings coming back in, Johnny Blakey had been appointed. You know, it seemed to me that the decisions the club were making were really controlled. They were really measured about what they wanted to do. And look, at the end of the day, mate, you know, Brownie and Sean, you know, have been players of our football club and they've left their DNA here. They're no longer here and my energy is now into, you know, R2, Aiden Corr, Youngie, you know, Steve-O and the rest of the crew that, you know, that I've got to make better.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.